Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Well, before we start talking about borderline personality disorder, I wonder whether you can tell me what's meant by personality disorder. It's an interesting concept. We're going to focus on borderline personality disorder tonight with clinical psychologist Sarah Edelman, the author of Change Your Thinking, amongst many other books. Sarah, good to see you and welcome back to Nightlife.
Hi, Philip, and good evening to all our listeners.
Yes. What is meant by personality disorder anyway?
Well, I guess most people are aware of mental health problems like...
I mean, apart from borderline, but what's meant by personality disorder?
Yeah, I mean, just to distinguish it from things like depression or anxiety disorders or sleep disorders, they're often transient things that people experience. When we talk about personality disorders, we're really talking about enduring long-term aspects of our personality that are, you might say, dysfunctional or unhelpful or create distress. And these habits of personality mean that we often have difficulty in relationships. We may have difficulty in our work situations. We may find that we just feel upset or distressed very readily. And it seems to be something that's sort of part of who we are, as opposed to transient experiences, as we may experience with other mental health problems. So I think last year we talked about narcissistic personality disorder, and that was an example of a personality disorder. But there are currently in the DSM-5, which is the diagnostic manual, sort of the Bible of mental health problems, there are 10 personality disorders that are listed, and that includes antisocial personality disorder, obsessive compulsive personality disorder, avoidant personality disorder, paranoid, histrionic, and various others as well. So all those personality disorders combined account for about 6.5% of the population. So about 6.5% of the population have a personality disorder. And we know that in the workplace, it actually has a significant effect on people's functioning in the workplace, ability to maintain a job, ability to get on with other people within the workplace.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're focusing tonight on borderline personality disorder. What's that exactly?
Well, that's one type of personality disorder. It's sometimes been referred to as emotionally unstable personality disorder. And people with this condition tend to have experienced overwhelming emotions and often strong experiences of anger. They may get triggered very easily. Some people refer to it as like having exposed nerve endings where, things just press their buttons so easily, and when they get triggered, they feel overwhelmed. They might experience intense, out of control emotions, and they may change quite suddenly. They also tend to be very impulsive in their behaviours. They may be more prone to sometimes self harm or suicidal thoughts, and sometimes suicidal actions. They may be reckless in their behaviours. So there's a whole lot of behaviours there that are very challenging both for the person but also for family members and the people that have to deal with them. And we know that borderline personality disorder affects about between 1% and 4% of the Australian population, and that will depend on the study that's been done. There's been a number of studies that have found different things. I think quite a few people would say it's probably closer to 2%, but that's still a significant number of Australians who are living with this condition.
Yeah, exactly. What causes someone to develop it in the first place?
Well, it used to be thought that it was, that it was largely just childhood trauma, sexual abuse in childhood or neglect or bullying or death of parents, just emotional abuse, physical abuse, and that can certainly be one of the factors, but we know the genes also play a significant role. And sometimes when we look at individuals with borderline personality disorder, there's no obvious history of trauma or neglect or problematic parenting. It just sometimes some people are, in the genetic lottery, just prone to this sort of sensitivity, and perhaps even minor life experiences can sort of spark it off.
Okay, so we're not looking for trauma.
Often there is trauma, but not always. So it's really, I guess it comes back to that nature and nurture, and it can be a combination of both. It can be more one than the other. But when we look at major traumatic events in childhood, there are a lot of people who experience it, and the majority don't develop borderline personality disorder, although they may develop other types of mm-hmm. disorders like complex post-traumatic stress disorder. So there are a number of disorders that people can experience from early life trauma, but not everyone develops borderline personality disorder.
All right, borderline personality disorder. Let's take a closer look at some of the features. People with borderline personality disorder can often have unstable emotions and
yeah,
moods.
Yeah, I guess that's one of the real defining aspects of it. They're triggered very, very readily and very easily. And their mood swings are very intense. So, look, we all get moody at times. We all get triggered, actually, at times. Sometimes someone will say something to you and it really annoys you or irritates you and you might sort of stew on it a little bit or go away and think about it. But you're probably not going to perhaps say, or you may not say anything, or if you say something, it might be sort of very constrained. Whereas, we all regulate emotions to some degree. You've had a bad day, or you're stressed, or you're anxious, and you come home, and you might sit in front of the telly, or have a glass of wine, or talk to a family member, and sort of, and that all helps us to regulate. But with people with borderline personality disorder, it's very hard to regulate. They get very triggered.
They don't have handholds.
They don't have that ability to regulate, or it takes a long time before their emotions are, soothed or under control.
They often have a fear of abandonment.
Yeah.
What's all that about?
Well, that just seems to be one of the features, and they can be so sensitive to abandonment. So if a friend cancels an appointment or an arrangement, or you invite someone to to a dinner and they can't make it, it can be taken as a personal insult. It can be offended. If a partner comes home late from work or makes arrangements to go out with their friends, the person with borderline personality disorder may literally be frantic or angry. Or might start to track their movements or beg them to stay. So there's sort of like desperate attempts to try and avoid abandonment. And paradoxically, sometimes this over concern about abandonment can actually lead to the very thing that's feared.
Yeah, that's interesting. They often also experience, not always, often chronic feelings of emptiness.
Yeah, people describe...
Is that related to this abandonment feeling?
Well, I guess that's kind of another feature. So overall, there are nine possible characteristics for borderline personality disorder, and in order to meet criteria, they need to have five. So they will have some... So people with borderline personality disorder will have some of these. Mm-hmm. But the feelings of emptiness, I guess, are a separate thing to fear of abandonment. And sometimes people describe almost having this void inside, feeling sort of so empty or hollow, feeling like I'm nobody or nothing. And sometimes they try to fill that void through things like drugs or eating or spending or sex. So it's sort of looking to make up for what feels like is missing within them.
And explosive anger is something that people deal with.
And that's the thing that I guess makes it so difficult to live with for family members, for partners, for friends, but particularly, I guess, family, if they sort of have to deal with them on a regular basis. This the tendency to walk on eggshells because you just don't want to trigger them and you don't want to, be the object of their rage. And sometimes after they've had the explosive anger, they may feel guilty or they may feel ashamed or they may feel angry at themselves. So sometimes that anger turns towards self-contempt. Particularly if they've sort of done damage to a relationship or basically destroyed a relationship, which is something that happens quite a bit.
Yeah, and relationships almost by definition, I suppose, are not stable.
So they're often intense, and in the beginning they can be really positive and intense, and they're sort of characterised by initially idealisation and then within a short period of time devaluation. And that may be how they respond to potential partners. They've met the love of their life, they're really excited, and within, a short period of time, they feel real contempt and anger sometimes hatred towards them. But they also have that similar relationships with sometimes with friends and even with mental health practitioners. So they find a new therapist, they get very excited, they just think they're fantastic, and then it may be a matter of weeks before they've decided that no, they're hopeless and they don't want anything, don't want to see them anymore.
And many people with the condition do not have a clear self-image. They don't know who they are.
Yeah, which I guess would be really disturbing. It's this sense of, you know, I don't know. You know, sometimes they like themselves, sometimes they hate themselves, sometimes they perceive themselves as evil. And because they don't have a strong sense of self, they often try to create it through things like, you know, doing their hair in an unusual way, body piercing, getting tattoos. They might even change jobs or friends or partners or religion, take on a new religion. So it's that constant search for identity to try and sort of, I guess, forge a sense of self.
Hmm. They're often impulsive or self-destructive.
Yeah, and that I guess that's the other thing that really disturbs family members. So they're often engaged in harmful sensation-seeking behaviour, and particularly if they're upset. So when they're triggered, they might engage in binge eating or spending money or driving recklessly or drinking excessive alcohol and you know, partaking in drugs or engaging in risky sex. So it's that sort of tendency towards sort of really pushing the boundaries in terms of recklessness.
Mm. And maybe a corollary then almost, that people with this personality, borderline personality disorder, are more likely to engage in self-harm or even suicidal behaviour.
Yeah, and I guess that when other people who don't sort of understand self-harm kind of think it's, you know, it's weird or it sort of shows really, I guess, major pathology. But really what it is a way of trying to self-soothe when people are feeling emotionally, you know, dysregulated. So typically things like cutting, burning, some people will bang their head against a wall. Others will engage in suicide. They might suicidal behaviour. They might think about suicide. They might make suicidal gestures or threats. And sadly, some of them do go on to suicide to end their lives.
They might also feel suspicious and paranoid and delusional as well, particularly when they're stressed.
Yeah, and I guess that's the other thing, that people with borderline personality disorder sometimes experience psychotic symptoms, and so they might believe that other people are watching them, or they might believe that they're following them or listening to their conversations, or they might believe there's, you know, someone in or little camera in the bedroom and perceive that others are somehow keeping an eye on them, or even thinking that people on the bus can hear my thoughts or know what I'm thinking. So sort of aspects of what we call psychosis, being out of touch with reality or being delusional.
Mm. Stigma is a big problem though, isn't it, for people with borderline personality disorder?
Well, yeah, stigma's a problem for any disorder, any personality disorder, but particularly for borderline. So if you think about what is a personality disorder, our personality disorder is intrinsically part of who we are. It's very much connected to our identity.
Mm.
So when we say you have a personality disorder, we're really saying, you know, directly or indirectly or implying that you know, you're broken. There's something about you that isn't, about who you are, that is not right.
You're high maintenance.
Yeah, and particularly for borderline personality disorder, it's highly stigmatized and often labeled as, you know, psycho or drama queen or difficult or just crazy. And some psychologists avoid giving the diagnosis for that reason.
Oh, because they
don't want to stigmatize. I mean, I think now the general consensus is that you probably, you know, should give the diagnosis. There is one kind of, I guess, field in psychology or school of psychology that is against labeling any psychopathology, because they say once you label someone, you're sort of saying you're inferior or there's something wrong with you. I guess the alternative view to that is you need to be able to diagnose it, because that's what drives treatment.
The sufferers always think, look, I know there's something wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's something wrong. It's not fear of knowing that something's wrong. I want to know what it is.
Yeah, and in fact, sometimes when they get the diagnosis, they're relieved, because at least now I can make sense. Now I understand. And they go online and they have a look at all the symptoms, and they say, yes, you know, that's me. And then they actually have a look at how long people have been suffering and the sort of things that they've been going through. And sometimes they then get very depressed or worried about that. You sort of read all sorts of really sad things online.
Yeah. Anne from Randwick's given us a call. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Anne.
Sarah, I managed a home visiting community health service some years ago, And I had a staff member who was clinically competent and quite extroverted and friendly to a lot of staff. But I discovered these three things in this order. One, they were writing in patient notes that they hadn't seen while they went to the movies. Second, she asked another staff member to forge or to write that her license, her driver's license was valid when it wasn't. And thirdly, when I asked her why she got a fine, a car parking fine, she told me that she only parked in the legal part of the no standing zone, which did my head in. But is that a personality?
It could be, and I guess it's very hard for me to sort of diagnose without sort of doing a really full assessment. But it's certainly not behaviour that you'd sort of normally associate with good mental health.
She did end up causing, well, particularly the person that she tried to get to forge that her license was valid. And the other nurses, when they found out that she wasn't seeing patients, were upset.
We see all sorts of strange or antisocial or dysfunctional or unhealthy behaviour, I guess, within the course of our jobs, our dealings with neighbours, the public, etc. Nearly half the population have mental illness at some stage, so it's quite feasible, but it's hard for me to say.
Mm. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. Bye-bye. John's on the line. Hi, John.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, John.
You've got it, have you?
Yeah, I reckon. Mm. That explains me to a T. And, you know, I'm not really aware that it was, well, I know it's a bit of a problem, but you know, that I've lived with it for a while, a long time.
Yeah, well, usually it starts either during adolescence or early adulthood. So for most people, it sort of begins fairly early in life.
Yeah. Mm.
And how does it affect you, John?
Well, I want to run away sometimes, just go and hide. Mm-hmm. I feel worthless. I haven't really worked for a while. It's virtually ruined my life. Mm. But, you know, it started, well, what triggered it off, I think, is many years ago I started having health problems. I have had a few heart attacks. They sort of started around 06 and, you know, heart problems, clogged arteries, stents put in. And then, you know, I run a business then and I was trying to run the business. I got angry all the time. You know, I was finding it harder to deal with people, with clients and everything else. And, you know, eventually I let the business run to the ground and through it, walked away from it, give up everything, lost everything.
Okay. John, I guess I just need to just make a brief comment about it's always a good idea to get diagnosed or to see somebody, because even though we're talking about the features of borderline personality disorder, sometimes they overlap with other disorders and sometimes people do misdiagnose themselves. But it sounds like, you know, whatever it is, whether it's borderline or something else, certainly there would be things that you can do and strategies you can use to manage.
Have you had a diagnosis, John?
Well, back then, years ago, the doctor sent me to a psychologist and they just put me on medication, and, you know, I didn't really like the medication and it didn't sort of do too much for me, and I stopped taking it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and lived with it ever since.
Mm.
Yeah, all right.
I don't know what I should do.
Yeah, look, well, my advice would be to go to your GP, talk to your GP about difficulty managing emotions and how it's affected you.
Yeah.
And they should be able to provide you with a mental health treatment plan, which means that you can go and see a psychologist for a number of sessions that are Medicare subsidised, and they can hopefully do a thorough assessment and then tell you exactly what is going on for you and how you can manage some of those emotions.
Mm. Okay.
Good luck, John.
All right, John, good luck with it. Thank you. Paula, you say you've got it as well?
Yes. I've been diagnosed with it, and I have psychotic features attached to it.
Okay, yeah.
And I have really gripping agoraphobia as well, and panic disorder on top of it. And I've been suffering for 45 years. I'm on medication, some antipsychotic medication as well, which seems to manage some of the features that I've been experiencing.
Mm.
But the key I've found is to keep my mind occupied so that I can't get into those mindsets that sort of where you self-trigger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's so easy to be triggered, isn't it?
Very, very easy.
Yeah. And so, Paula, it sounds like this has had a sort of a huge effect on your life over the years.
Yes, it has, very much so. Mm. I have to watch myself at the moment because my husband just passed away not long ago, and I've noticed some spiralling behaviours beginning, which I have to nip in the bud. Now I see a therapist regularly every 4 weeks, and I've been seeing her for years and years.
Right.
And she's been a tremendous help in helping me get past some of those behaviours that have been very self damaging.
Right. Oh, Paula, I'm sorry to hear that, but thank you for sharing your experience and good luck.
Thanks, Paula.
And I'm glad to hear that Paula is seeing a therapist.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really important.
Exactly. We're talking about borderline personality disorder with Sarah Edelman tonight. I mean, a couple of the callers have raised this, Sarah, that people with borderline personality disorder are also very likely to have other coexisting mental health problems, which may be misdiagnosed, I suppose, too.
And in fact, the technical term is comorbidities. Comorbidities refers to having more than one mental health problem. And in fact, that's the norm rather than the exception. So most people with borderline personality disorder will have other disorders like depression. It's not unusual for them to also have bipolar disorder, by the way. So you can actually have borderline and bipolar disorder. They may have eating disorders. They may experience drug and alcohol abuse. They may have ADHD or anxiety disorders. Interestingly, when borderline personality disorder is successfully treated, these other disorders also improve. So they seem to all be somehow interrelated. And the other point I guess I was trying to make with John when he was speaking is that borderline personality disorder can easily be confused for other disorders, and even mental health experts can sometimes confuse them.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes a person is diagnosed with, say, bipolar disorder, because with bipolar disorder they can be angry and depressed, and they have mood instability, but with bipolar disorder the mood instability is much slower. So you might be manic for 3 or 4 or 5 days, whereas with borderline personality disorder, your mood can change, several times in one day. People also sometimes have complex trauma, and that's from perhaps abuse in childhood or traumatic childhood experiences, and they will be reactive. They will get anxious very easily. They get triggered very easily. People who are high on neuroticism tend to be triggered very readily, and they don't necessarily have borderline personality disorder. So there's a lot of, I guess, overlap. And they're not the same thing.
How does it feel if you're a partner, a family member, or a child of a person who's got borderline personality disorder? What's it feel like?
Look, there's often very, very many long-suffering, caring families who are trying to sort of work out how to manage a loved one with borderline personality disorder, often described as a roller coaster ride or walking on eggshells.
Mm-hmm.
And even for the partner, sometimes people marry this person, and they're sort of madly in love, and they idealise you, and then suddenly they sort of change, and they're suddenly very critical and angry and explosive, and the person may be really struggling and not knowing what to do. So it can be a really difficult journey, particularly for people who really care about their welfare.
Yes. My texter says, "Hi, my name is Sally. I'm 57. I was diagnosed BPD, borderline personality disorder, at 15. Never gave it much thought. 3 years ago, I had a horrid breakup. End up in a psych ward for 6 weeks and re-diagnosed.
Mm.
Found an awesome psychologist who taught me to not to believe everything my mind tells me.
Yeah.
I'm on meds for life. I struggle with my worth every day, but I've finally learned that people are busy not angry at me or ignoring me.
Yeah.
I haven't done anything wrong. Yeah. My brain just tells me lots of lies.
That's terrific. I mean, I love the way that that's expressed, because you're right. We cannot believe everything that our mind tells us or our thoughts tell us. And particularly if we've got, you know, mental health issues, we often have thoughts that are misleading or incorrect.
Mm. My texter says, you've just described my eldest son to a T. What I'd like to know is whether it could have been caused by emotional trauma. His father and I hit a rocky patch and nearly split up when he was 18 months old. There was a lot of shouting, tears and drama, and I've always worried about the effect on him.
Oh, look, it's so hard to say.
I know, and this is the guilt that she's putting on.
Look, it's so hard to say. In the end, there would have been some physiological vulnerability to it. I guess no one can say. It's complex. But I guess it is what it is. We still need to, in the end, work out how to support the person and how to try and help them. Yeah.
Martin, hello.
Yes. Good evening.
Hi.
Hi, Martin.
My daughter has had BPD from her teenage years. What I find it difficult to cope with is the mood swings. Like, she lives in a different state than me. I went up there, I only got back last Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
She has my only grandchild, her and her partner. I've only seen the grandchild a couple of times. She's now threatened me today that I'll never see the grandchild again, and I'm not to contact her or her partner again.
Mm. This was the visit wasn't a success, Martin. Is that
what? Well, I went up there for a holiday, Philip.
Right.
And I happened to be, it was Darwin, they're in Darwin, and I happened to be up there and I said, I took them some gifts. And I said, and she knew I was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took them to dinner last Saturday weeknight. She was fine. Then the mood changes. And then she wanted to take me out on the Tuesday. And I went out with them and she turned around and didn't want anything to do with me then. Didn't want to see me before I came back. She's my only daughter. I worry about her.
Mm.
And today she sent me or rang me and threatened all of this.
Oh, Martin, I'm so sorry to hear that. That's a very, very tragic story. And I guess particularly if it's your only daughter, the relationship.
Well, it's my only child.
Yeah, and the relationship must be so important. I mean, what I would suggest is just leave it for a little while, because, I mean, it sounds like perhaps she got triggered by something you said and you may not even realise, I mean, you probably don't realise what you said, but leave it for a while and perhaps after a period of time, if you can just write her a letter and just say, I'm not exactly sure what I did, but I'm so sorry. I can see that you're very upset and, you know, if it was my fault, I apologise. I only want you to be well and happy. That's the most important thing to me. So try to give her some positive statements, but I wouldn't do it straight away, because I think when people are really angry, they're not receptive to that. But after a few weeks or sometimes a few months, you know, they've calmed down and then you can be reasonable. But you do need to be sort of give a very heartfelt apology, even if you don't think you did anything wrong, in order to just try and reconnect with her and reestablish the relationship. That's something that may help. But good luck. It sounds very painful.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Martin. Thank you. Bye. Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Phil.
Hi.
Thanks. Thanks for your show.
Pleasure.
Dr. Sarah, I'd like to ask, is there any connection between lupus and BPD? Because we've got a daughter living with us, but pretty well barricaded in the front room. She's worried about losing his sight and various things associated with lupus, but also really displaying a lot of the symptoms that you've just talked about. Is there any link between the two?
I don't think so. I've never heard of a link with lupus, but I just wonder whether sometimes people can have disorders that are, you know, that are complex and may not necessarily be borderline personality disorder, and sometimes there may be, I mean, if she has lupus and she's really worried about the, you know, the future consequences, there could be a lot of anxiety, there could be a bit of depression, and that may account for social withdrawal. She may just have that sort of temperament, which is perhaps a bit more reserved and closed. So it's hard to know without, I guess, getting a proper assessment. Has she seen a psychologist, or has she gone and
oh, had, yes,
she
yes,
has?
Yes,
yeah. And do you know if she's been diagnosed?
With lupus, but not with BPD.
I mean, I think one of the risks with this sort of show, where we're just talking generally about the condition, is that people very, very quickly say, "Well, that's me," or "That's my daughter," and that, you know, it could be the case, but not necessarily so. We just need to be a little bit careful with immediately assuming that that's the case. But it does sound like she's struggling with mental health issues of some sort. Finding someone, a psychologist who is supportive and who's a good fit, is one of the most important things. If you can manage that, that can often be helpful.
Yeah, we're certainly trying, but we're sort of painted into a corner a bit in that she feels that we're dealing with us is stressful because of family things. So, she's, for example, she just cancelled an appointment with an eye specialist tomorrow, which... But at the same time, she's scared stiff of going blind.
Oh, that must be.
It's really hard.
That must be really hard for you as parents too.
Thanks, Chris.
All right. Thanks, Phil.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Bye. Debbie from Maroochydore. G'day, Debbie. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Debbie. I'm just ringing on behalf of my daughter. My daughter lives in Bundaberg, and she has a young family, and it took some time for her to be diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. And I don't know that too many of the medical professionals take it seriously. But I'm just wondering if that area, regional area up in Bundaberg, has an area where she can actually go to get more comfort and understanding.
Look, I don't know. I mean, generally the regions aren't as well serviced as the cities, so no. I don't know specifically about it, that area. Generally, we know if there's a large public hospital, most or many of them, certainly within Sydney, have treatments specifically for borderline personality disorder. And I was going to talk about this a little bit later, but there's a treatment called DBT, or dialectical behaviour therapy, which is evidence-based and is very helpful. You would need to contact, I would suggest you contact any large hospital or the closest public hospital within your area and inquire about, you know, inquire of the psych department. They would have a psych and ask whether they run programs for people with borderline personality disorder.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of books and self-help material available as well, but I still think in the end you really do need, she needs to participate in a program, in quite a structured program.
Yeah, it's got to be one-on-one or, you know, people.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Often they're actually running groups, and then the person sees a psychologist between the group sessions. I mean, they are the most effective. That somewhere in your region, there should be a service like that available, but you'd need to do a little bit of digging.
Mm. Yes, okay. We shall.
Good luck,
Thanks,
Debbie.
Thanks, Debbie. Well, thank you. Bye-bye. 1-300-800-222. Chris on the text line says, I'm a partner with BPD. It's bloody hard work watching someone you love struggling and not really knowing how to help them.
Yeah.
Let's talk about strategies to help. I mean, if you have someone with BPD. Are there any strategies that can be used to help them?
Well,
deal with
I guess the first thing is just to be informed and to understand what borderline personality disorder is. I guess to try and not take it personally, because sometimes they are very difficult to live with and they'll get angry with you. And so there's sort of a lot of pressure. You need to understand that a lot of their behaviour, which might seem antisocial or rude or aggressive, is really about being vulnerable. And so see their vulnerability, see their fear of abandonment. And it's, you know, and the other thing is we always remind people, set boundaries. Be respectful, but set boundaries. And it may include saying, look, when you go into a rage, I'm going to leave the room, you know, and being able to communicate in an assertive way and saying, you know, this is, look, I understand you're in a lot of pain, but it's also really difficult for me. So assertive communication and trying to reach agreement about positive things that they can do. What sort of things can they work on? And even say, okay, well, there's certain things I'm going to try and do, but you need to do them as well. You know, acknowledge when they do well, when they can, you know, when they manage to contain some of that, you know, some of their anger or their emotions, support them, acknowledge them. But also you do need to set boundaries. There's a book called Stop Walking on Eggshells when someone you love has borderline personality disorder. And it has a whole lot of strategies. And I highly recommend it to anyone who has a family member with, or even a partner or even a friend with borderline personality disorder. So it just provides a whole lot of strategies on managing someone with borderline, you know, managing to sort of stay in a healthy relationship.
I mean,
with
if people are
situation.
Really aggressive, is it okay to go to the police, for example?
Well, I mean, I guess occasionally they do. If they're, if they're family members, you know, normally families are I guess, loath to do so. But sometimes you get some, you know, you get a boss or you get a colleague at work who is a bully and has borderline personality disorder and gets angry. And people do sometimes, you know, make official complaints to either HR or police, or even occasionally get an AVO against somebody who is, you know, who is aggressive. So, yeah, that sometimes happens.
Okay, is it treatable? I mean, do people recover, or is it just something that people have to live with?
Well, a couple of things. It seems one of the things seems to be that as people get older, the symptoms tend to diminish a bit anyway. So age helps. So people over 60, for example, in their 50s or 60s, some of the symptoms are less severe. But there's been, I guess, two main treatments that have a good evidence base for being effective in helping people in improving life function, in reducing the symptoms. And in fact, for many people who undergo these programs, they no longer meet the criteria for borderline personality disorder.
Okay.
And both of them are structured therapies. So we're talking about not just going to see your therapist once a week and having a chat. You need to actually learn skills to be able to manage dysfunctional emotions and dysregulation. So the two therapies I mentioned earlier, one is called dialectical behaviour therapy, or DBT. That is run by a number of both private clinics and also public hospitals for people with borderline personality disorder, and particularly, I guess, to reduce the, you know, recurrence of presenting to emergency with self-harm or suicidal attempts. So that's funded by the public system. And DBT includes, there's four components. Part of it is learning mindfulness and mindfulness strategies. Part of it is learning interpersonal skills training, how to get on with people, even emotional intelligence. How are other people feeling? What sort of things can I do to, you know, to manage this relationship? It involves teaching people to tolerate distress and how to allow some, you know, to just sit with distress sometimes, or to regulate emotions. So emotion regulation might be specific strategies and specific tools that they use to reduce the intensity of upsetting emotions. So they get skills coaching at the actual group sessions, and then they need the reinforcement of a psychologist between sessions. And normally that that takes 6 months to 12 months, and sometimes people will do it for 2 years. If they last out the program, they often get very good results. The other form of therapy that is been found to be helpful for borderline personality disorder is called schema therapy. Both of these therapies need practitioners or mental health experts who are specialised, who know what they're doing and who know how to administer these therapies. And sometimes family members and partners might also need support. But I guess the good news is there are good treatments around now, and they are becoming more accessible, but still, I guess, a lot more people with the disorder than going into good treatment at the moment.
Exactly. All right, Alan, hello. Sorry you had to wait there. Hi, Alan.
Hello.
Hi, Alan.
Yeah, that's you, Al. Sorry, hello. Sorry you had to wait on there. Yeah. We just had a few calls, yeah.
No, that's okay. I've read some of your books, Dr. Edelman. I'm wondering, what would you consider to be the difference between a narcissistic paranoid personality and a borderline personality disorder?
Narcissistic has a whole series of features there may be a little bit of overlap with borderline, but not much. So narcissistic tend to be very unempathic, very into self-promotion, tend to want to hang out with other people that they see as high profile. They're very image conscious. I mean, they're not the same thing as borderline personality disorder, but borderline is actually quite a different disorder. It's more just not being able to manage emotions, being highly reactive, being self-destructive. I'm not sure there's a lot of overlap between the two.
Why do you ask?
So the
paranoia. Well,
yes.
A number of conditions can involve paranoia. There is actually a personality disorder called paranoid personality disorder, which is separate again. And yes, paranoia can be part of narcissism. It can also be part of borderline personality disorder. So I guess paranoia is just one feature where people feel unsafe or threatened and suspect that other people want to do them harm in some way. But that can be a feature of a number of different disorders, not just narcissism.
Well, Phil, you asked me why I asked. I once rang up several years ago with regard to the problems I was having with my crazy mother.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you know, the mafia people, they stole all her money, stole my inheritance.
Yeah.
And in the process, I had a run-in with the health minister, Mr. Greg Hunt, when he wasn't the health minister. And he had me classified as that, which I've only found out recently after having a smash in my car. And it came up, and therefore, I know where it's come from, and I'm wondering if I can get rid of this rubbish they've said about me, because I'm well known down in Victoria, and I've got massive problems with the authorities.
Mm.
I've got a real run-in now with Vic Roads. They don't want to give me my licence back. They use the word, "Oh, we want to make sure you're safe on the road." It's because I've had heart attacks, strokes, you name it, and I'm still here. And it's much to their chagrin. And the problem I've got is I'm dealing with people, in my opinion, that are psychotic. They're psychopaths. Or people could call them sociopaths, to make it simple. How do you deal with people like this?
Well, Alan, it's a complex problem, and I unfortunately can't sort of just come up with any straightforward answers for you. I'm not sure, but it does sound like it does sound really tough. And I just want to say good luck. And I hope you can work it out. I'm not sure what the answer is.
Yeah, there's not. It's probably beyond the scope of us right now, Al, to fix it. But anyway, look. But thanks for sharing it too. All right, 1-300-800-222 is the number. Can you take medications for BPD?
Look, there's no medication that will really change borderline personality disorder itself. Mm. People who have borderline personality disorder often are on medication, but they're usually on medication for some of the other associated conditions, or what we call the comorbid conditions. So they might be on antidepressant medication. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're on other types of medication. There is some research, I just saw a study this afternoon, which showed that certain medications can reduce impulsive aggression amongst people with borderline personality disorder who tend to have that trait of also being aggressive. So possibly for one aspect of it. But generally, medication doesn't really do a lot for that, the borderline personality disorder component itself.
Mm. What about if you're living with it? What sort of things can you do yourself taking action?
Well, I guess there's now quite a lot of stuff online for self-help strategies. I just want to draw, for listeners who are interested in finding out a little bit more about it, there's a just to Google, and there's a site called Help Guide, one word, helpguide.org. And then if you put a semicolon and put in Emotional Intelligence Toolkit, it's an excellent set of resources. I think it's got lots of really good material. So that's just something simple that you can just get online. But in addition to that, the sort of things that are helpful, first of all, please be seeing a mental health practitioner and try and get and see somebody who can support you with either DBT or schema therapy. But also things that have been shown to be helpful are mindfulness, becoming more aware of what's going on, helps to control emotions, and just observing your own emotions and watching them change sometimes. A whole series of self-soothing things that people can do, just engaging the senses, using things like touch and smell and taste and sounds and even movement to control emotions. Of course, having a healthy lifestyle is really important. Just regular exercise and having a healthy diet, particularly important. And just building relationships, social awareness, coming to understand how other people feel, the sort of things that we can do to improve relationships with other people. So there are all sorts of self-help strategies that people can engage in.
Caller wants to know, what's the difference between bipolar and borderline personality disorder? Well, I think as you talked about, there are some overlaps, aren't there?
There's some overlaps, but they're quite different. Right. So bipolar disorder is characterised by periods of severe depression, mm-hmm. and at other times there may be periods of being elevated, in other words, being energised, wired, charged, having lots of energy and not needing to sleep. But between those episodes, people may be feeling maybe euthymic, which means sort of feeling very normal and stable. It's not a personality disorder. It's not an intrinsic part of their personality disorder. They have episodes where they feel either wired or low. Borderline personality disorder is very much part of the person's personality and affects every area of their life, and often, you know, day to day has more wide ranging effects.
Mm. All right. Look, time has beaten us, and I'm sorry to those we couldn't get to on the board, but thank you for being part of it. We've been talking about borderline personality disorder with Dr. Sarah Edelman, clinical psychologist. And that website, or that Google site again, Sarah, which you say is useful.
Mm-hmm. Help guide, one word, helpguide.org. And then adding to that, Emotional Intelligence Toolkit.
Hmm.
And it's just lots of really useful strategies on emotional intelligence, getting on with other people.
Fantastic. All right, Sarah, terrific as always. Thank you.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.